Hi, this is Joe Taylor with On Faith's Edge. You're listening to a segment-only episode of On Faith's Edge with former atheist attorney turned Christian apologist Michael Minot. To hear the entire episode, go to onfaithsedge.com. Hello, Michael.
Joe, how are you?
I'm doing great, man. I'm actually having a pretty good week. I got just about an hour or so ago, I got to talk with somebody that was absolutely delightful. I was actually feeling a little down throughout the day about a couple of things, and when you get to talk to somebody as delightful as the person I talked to, well, that just makes it all that better. How about you? How are things with Michael Minot and the crew in Colorado?
We're doing summer here in Colorado. I have four children with my wife, and between ages of 6 and 16, and this particular week, they're not at any camps, not at any vacation Bible schools. They're all here, and friends are coming in, so we have a rocking and rolling house.
Minot Central, huh?
It's fun.
I know with that at my house is, but you know, I have an older daughter and two younger daughters, but especially with my older daughter, there was a time that we just kept the back door open and the front door open as they filed through throughout the day and throughout the evening. So I understand exactly what you're talking about. So you guys are doing okay, huh?
Everything's fine. Thank you.
Outstanding. So are you ready for this week's question?
I'm ready.
All right, let's get right into it. I recently read that there are claims of 143 some odd contradictions in the Bible, which brings me to my question this week. Does the Bible contradict itself? And if so, can we still call it the Word of God?
My reading of the Bible and the study of the Bible, I have not found any contradictions. I understand the questions regarding how some people believe that there might be, based upon there being different writers that are taking into account the actions of people or things that they said. The different writers are writing on the same topic or event, and there may be slight nuances, but I don't find any contradictions in the Bible.
I guess it might be a good idea if we can to just kind of keep in mind exactly what do we consider a contradiction? Is it just a black and white right or wrong? Is it the idea that he said this, she said that, or different numbers don't match, or times of day, or whatever? So do you mind just touching a little bit about what you consider a contradiction to be for the sake of this conversation?
Yes, a contradiction would be where two people testify to, again, events or what someone said that is wholly inconsistent with each other. There's no way to reconcile the two to be the same event. And so there's all kinds of different examples of that. Let's say when you mentioned time of day, let's say that there is testimony that an event occurred at a specific hour of the day, and it's verified by some kind of, whether it's light or dark or some other kind of event that was taking place at the same time. So if the testimony is that the event occurred at midnight, that certainly is different than the testimony that the same event occurred at noon. So those would seem to be contradictory. There are times of the day that we can identify that are clearly not the same.
Okay. We're going to touch a little bit later about that specific issue, the time of day. There are a series of contradictions, Michael, that because of the weight of the event, it seems very troubling to me, if we present these indeed as contradictions, is very troubling to me. And the reason is the weight of the event. And these specific contradictions are related to the supposed resurrection and ascension of Jesus into heaven. Now, the reason these are so troubling to me personally is that this event, the resurrection and the ascension of Jesus into heaven, is the defining moment in the Christian faith. Without the miracle of the resurrection, Michael, frankly, Christianity is not unlike any other faith. This event must be accurate. Wouldn't you agree?
I do agree.
Well, there are a number that I picked from this particular event. But I picked three specifically, and let's go ahead and dig a little deeper into these. The first question that I have about the resurrection and the resurrection specifically and the ascension is, how long was Jesus in the tomb? Here's the reason I ask. In Matthew chapter 12, Jesus was talking about his death and resurrection. So it hadn't happened yet. But Jesus said, for as Jonas was 3 days and three nights in the whale's belly, 3 days and three nights in the whale's belly, so shall the Son of Man be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. Now, fast forward a little bit. The Bible also says that he was in the earth less than 3 days and three nights. We see that in Matthew 28:1. After the Sabbath, at the dawn of the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to the tomb after the Sabbath, at the dawn of the first day of the week. Mark 6 in chapter 16, very early on the first day of the week, just after sunrise, they were on their way to the tomb. On Luke 24, on the first day of the week, very early in the morning, the women took spices they had prepared and went to the tomb. Early on the first day of the week in John 20, this is John 20, early on the first day of the week, while it was dark, Mary Magdalene went to the tomb and saw that the stone had been removed from the entrance. That's a key one. On the first day of the week. In Judaism, the Sabbath is celebrated on Saturday. So it seems this would make this day that they're talking about Sunday morning. If he died on the cross on Friday, that makes it only 2 days. Am I correct?
This is an interesting introduction into the issue of whether there are contradictions, because it gives us a context into how the Jewish nation identified what they had it as far as the calendar, as far as days, as far as time, those types of things. So when we read it from a North American standpoint, read the word day and night, we have a certain context that comes to mind. But that's a little bit different. Even today, if we went to Jerusalem, they would have a horn that blows at dusk. And the reason that that horn is blowing is because that begins the next day. Dusk to dusk is how they measure days. We, in the North American culture, and most everywhere else in the world, we begin our days at midnight. That is when the calendar moves from one day to the next. So there are some nuances within the Jewish culture that help us understand what 3 days and three nights mean. Another nuance, and this has a lot to do with Hebrew and Jewish idioms, is that the phrase 3 days and three nights really is a collection of words that talk about there being a day. And three nights is a little bit superfluous, but they run together, 3 days and three nights. So any time that an event occurs, that is the beginning of the first day, which then moves from there in the event that the event occurs for more than one day. They count the first day when it begins. So as you mentioned, it's clear from the Gospels that Jesus was crucified and he died before the beginning of the Sabbath, which began a dusk on Friday.
Right.
So sometime before that point, he expired. So he died on Friday before the beginning of Saturday. In the Jewish culture, they will count Friday as day one. So we move to Saturday.
So let me stop you there. I apologize.
Just a few hours later.
Friday is day one. He died on Friday is day one. Okay.
That's right. Just a few hours, maybe even just an hour or two before the horn blew, the ram's horn that was blown, the shofar that blows in Jerusalem, to begin the Sabbath on Friday night, which is basically, they would treat that as the beginning of Saturday, that starts the second day. Even though it's just a few hours after Jesus expired, it begins the second day.
I see.
Then when Saturday evening comes around and dusk occurs, another shofar horn blowing occurs, and that's the end of the Sabbath, that's the end of Saturday, and for their purposes, Sunday begins. So anything that happens on Sunday would be considered the third day. And that's how this particular situation, from a Jewish standpoint, is seen. Friday is one, Saturday is two, and then Sunday morning would be three.
So anything that happened after dusk on Saturday is Sunday.
Correct.
Okay.
Which would be the first day of the week. The right. Sabbath would be the last day of the week.
Right. Okay. So we have dusk. We have before dusk Friday to after dusk Sunday is considered 3 days. Is that accurate? I understand you
before,
correctly?
Before dusk on Friday until after dusk on Saturday.
Until after dusk on Saturday, excuse me. Until after dusk on Saturday is 3 days, correct?
That's right. Okay. Absolutely.
Gotcha. Gotcha. All right. Next, we have how many women and who actually came to the tomb? And let me frame it this way. I'm just going to read through these scriptures, and then you just clarify it, because they obviously read differently. All right. How many women and who came to the tomb? In Matthew chapter 28, it says two women, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary, came to the tomb, whoever the other Mary is. Mark chapter 16, three women, Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of James, and Salome, came to the tomb. With me?
Yes.
Luke chapter 24, three women, but three different women, Mary Magdalene and Joanna and Mary, the mother of James. So now we have two women, three women, one named Salome, and then three women, the same, two of the women are the same, one name, but one is named Joanna. And then in John chapter 20, it appears that only Mary Magdalene came to the tomb. So again, two women, and then two accounts of three women, but different, three different women, one Salome and one Joanna. And then one account says only Mary Magdalene. All four accounts, Michael, cannot be right.
Well, I think that they can. And the reason why is because the testimony of these writers, the gospel writers, is not such that they are excluding other people when they mention certain women who went to the tomb. For example, John, who you mentioned last, mentioned Mary Magdalene, but he did not say by name that other people did not go. So indicating that someone went is not mutually exclusive to anybody else going. So there's a different reporting of different people that went, but it's not an inconsistency. It's just simply a difference in reporting of who that writer knew that went. There could be some reasons that we don't know why, that some of the gospel writers may have known that more people went, but they simply mentioned less than everybody that they knew that went that morning. But from an inconsistency versus consistency standpoint, which is our question of the day, are these four accounts inconsistent? They're not inconsistent, because they do not specifically have an assertion that cannot be reconciled with any other assertion that's made by someone else.
When you say cannot, and just clarify that is this again, there are two what appears to be contradictory statements. Mark chapter 16 says Mary Magdalene, the mother of James, and Salome. And Luke chapter 24 says, again, Mary Magdalene, the mother of James, and this other woman named Joanna.
Reconciling those two, Luke does not say that the people in Mark, people that are mentioned in Mark, did not go. He's simply saying that there are people in an affirmative sense that did go. So that means that the three people he mentioned, Mary Magdalene, Joanna, and Mary, the mother of James, did go. He did not indicate that someone did not go. So if there is a statement made by one gospel writer, and pick a name that says, this person did go at that time, at this place, and then another gospel writer said that same person did not go at that time and that place, then there would be an irreconcilable difference between the two. But simply gospel writers saying that certain people went, not excluding anybody else, they're just saying they know of these certain people that went. They may have known of even more people that went, but for whatever reason, they chose to list the people that are there. So it's not an inconsistency. It's just a different way of reporting.
So if we take these accounts as a whole, we know that what you're saying is we know that at least four people went.
We can list everybody that's mentioned by any of the gospel writers who was a woman who went early in the morning to the tomb. We can collect them as a cumulative group and say that each one in that group went.
Gotcha.
Possibly there are people that are outside of the group that are reported by the gospel writers.
Right.
There could be more, but we do know that those people that were by name mentioned in one or many of the other gospels, then we know that those people went.
Under your explanation, if we were just to, let's just assume that these four, in this four account, we know at least four women were there. Mary Magdalene, the other Mary, this a woman named Joanna, and a woman named Salome.
That's correct.
All right, let's go ahead and move on to the final, what appears to be a contradiction. To whom and where did Jesus appear before he ascended? And here's the troubling part. These seem to be so wide and varied that I have difficulty reconciling it myself. In Luke chapter 24, it says Jesus ascended at Bethany after walking with the disciples. In Acts chapter 1, it says the disciples were at Mount Olivet one day from Jerusalem where Jesus ascended. In 1 Corinthians, it says Jesus appeared to more than 500 witnesses before his ascent to heaven. And then in Mark, Jesus ascension occurred almost immediately after appearance before the 11 disciples. How do you reconcile those four, what appear to be very different accounts of when and where Jesus ascended?
Let's look at the first two, which mentions in Luke that Jesus ascended from the vicinity of Bethany. And then in Acts, disciples were at Mount Olivet, which today we would know that, I think it's more commonly known as the Mount of Olives. Well, the Mount of Olives happens to be very near Bethany. And so when it's reported in Luke that Jesus ascended in the vicinity of Bethany, and that the geography of what we know even today matches. Now, in some places in the world, city boundaries change. But I think we have a lot of evidence, a lot of archaeological evidence, that Bethany on a today basis is very close to the same boundaries as the Bethany that was there at the time Jesus was walking the earth. And so today we can match these two up and they are consistent. They are very near each other. And as mentioned in Luke, they are in the vicinity of each other. Moving to the sequence of events, what Jesus did before he ascended, it's interesting that Paul mentions in 1 Corinthians that chapter 15, which you read from, that there was a series of things that Jesus did before ascending. Didn't say this all happened in one day. It's just things that he did, things that occurred between the time that he resurrected and before he ascended to heaven. And so one of the things that he did was appear to 500 witnesses at one time. That's not inconsistent with what Mark reports, which is Jesus ascended, he ascended immediately after appearing to the 11. So appearing to the 11 doesn't necessarily even have to be on the same day or even the same week as appearing to the 500. And so when Paul reports that Jesus appeared to 500, and then Mark reports that one of the last things Jesus did is appear to the 11 before he ascended, those are consistent, or let's say they are not inconsistent.
So it all has to do with perspective in the first two. One used Bethany as the perspective from the point as a point of perspective, and one used the Mount of Olives as a point of perspective. Is that correct?
That is true. And a way of giving an illustration to that is if something happened in one of the boroughs of New York City, would you name the borough itself Manhattan, or would you say it occurred in New York City? It's not exactly the same thing that we're talking about with Bethany and the Mount of Olives, but it's just two different ways of saying something, and they're both being accurate.
And so far as when he ascended, was it immediately after the 500, after appearing to the 500, or immediately after his appearance before the 11 disciples? It's just a matter of time that's not mentioned. We don't know how much time has elapsed between these events. We just know that Jesus did this before ascending.
Yes, I think 1 Corinthians 15, which you read from, is instructive in this, because there is a series of events. And Paul doesn't say that the events occurred in the sequence that he mentioned. He just said these things occurred between the resurrection and the ascension. Mark is a little bit more specific. He used the word immediately after appearing to the 11, Jesus ascended. Immediately is used quite a lot in the New Testament and the Old Testament as well, but more in the New Testament. And it doesn't mean the same immediacy, if I can use the word that way, as we would give it meaning. It means that it's somewhat proximate to, as opposed to the next moment or something like that.
Well, as we wrap up, Michael, give us your closing arguments on this issue of contradictions in the Bible.
From what we've talked about today, we've just a sampling of some of the issues that some people point to indicate that there may be contradictions in the text of the scriptures. Looking at this over the years that I've been reading the Bible and taking note of what other people claim regarding these, I think that each time that I've looked at this, these issues, when you dig in and understand what is being said, that there is either geography issues or context issues, maybe even culture issues, which when drilled down into, when you get into the weeds of what really was taking place, there's not inconsistencies, just different ways of reporting the same event.
Michael, thank you for your time again this week. We certainly appreciate it. Next week, we're going to ask you the question, did Jesus claim to be, and is Jesus indeed God? Fair enough?
Fair enough.
All right, we'll talk to you next week, brother.
Thank you, Joe.
You've been listening to a special segment-only episode of On Faith's Edge. To hear the complete episode, or to offer comments or questions, please visit onfaithsedge.com.